Morning, everybody. Do you know why Isaiah is called Isaiah? No? Because he's got one Isaiah than the other. Come on. Honestly, we're a bit slow off the mark this morning, aren't we? Just bear with me 2 seconds whilst I just sort out where I'm at. Steve, have you got that photograph, please? If you're able to put it up, that would be great. Can you all see what that says? Can you all see it? I'll read it. It says, prophecy class cancelled due to unforeseen circumstances. Which I just think is brilliant, isn't it? Absolutely brilliant. And that sort of, I saw that over the summer and I thought, oh, there's definitely a message in there. Without a doubt, there's a message in that. And we'll keep that up because hopefully whilst we go through. And I've been looking a little bit, praying a little bit, I suppose, through this question of what I want my life to look like. What do I want people to say? Oh, that's what James was about, and that's what he was, you know, that's what his life was like. So I've been drawn again to this passage in 1 Corinthians, which I'm going to read. I didn't tell Ellie what I was preaching on, and this is 1 Corinthians 13, and she was sat down last night, and I came into the sitting room, I just went, what do you think love is? That looks a little bit startled. A bit deep for a Saturday night, I think. But can we read this? 1 Corinthians 13. And yet I will show you the most excellent way. If I speak in human or angelic tongues but do not have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It doesn't envy, it doesn't boast, it isn't proud, it doesn't dishonour others, it isn't self-seeking, it isn't easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. Now we see only a reflection as in a mirror, then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. And that's why I put that picture up there, because, you know, we'll come on to this a little bit. And I want us to focus this morning on this question of what is love? I love reading this passage in particular and reflecting on it a little bit over the last couple of weeks and months. I started looking at when we were away on holiday. Isn't it just so liberating? Don't you just love the way that God speaks? That the life he has promised us when we follow him is just full of freedom and full of life and full of potential. That there's no restriction on it. That's the measure with which he values and loves us and releases us to go and value and love others in the same way. That's truly liberating, because that applies to whatever our circumstances are. Every day, every moment is an opportunity to walk in receiving the love God has for us and share it with those around us. This question of what is love is massive. It's occupied writers, musicians, people for centuries and centuries, trying to pinpoint, philosophers trying to pin down what is love. And the question is, how do we possess it? How do we possess it? If we can even try to put an answer to what it is, how do we then go around possessing it? I don't know whether you were reminded this morning of this. Can you remember in Friends when Joey, he finds a load of Ferrari gear? He's seen this, and he thinks this is going to be a great way of meeting girls. So he puts on all of his Ferrari gear, and he goes out into the street, and he covers it, or maybe there's covered, but there's a Ferrari car cover that covers all of the boxes in the street. And all he does all day is he just loiters outside the boxes covered in the Ferrari car cover with his sort of Ferrari gear on, and just waits for girls to come and chat to him. And he's getting away with it, and he thinks this is great, and until somebody crashes into the car, and of course the boxes go flying, and then he's left looking a bit red in the face. And it's a similar thing, you know, that these issues of what we read about in verses 1 and 2 about your prophecy and then love. And I was thinking this morning, you know, we've got now a shed or a loft full of camping gear. The fact that I've got stack loads of camping gear doesn't make me Bear Grylls. You know? Like, you think most blokes could do like a night in a glamping pod and come up the next morning thinking they're ready to go and tackle the north face of the Eiger or something in their t-shirts. But the fact that you've got all the gear doesn't actually mean you've got it. You know, I've got some golf clubs in the shed. That doesn't mean I'm going to qualify to play in the Ryder Cup. And I remember a little bit closer to home, you talk about a clanging gong. Years ago, I don't know if you, Colin will remember this, but I was helping Colin. I don't know why, but was helping Colin with some food prep. I don't know what it was for. And he entrusted to me the task of peeling the carrots. So I thought, right, I can probably handle this. And there I was, peeling the carrots, and Colin just sort of looked at me, double looked, and he went, no, what are you doing? You don't do it like if it here. And he was whizzing through the thing, and that thing was stripped in about 3 nanoseconds. And I've never peeled carrots the same way again. And I was probably a clanging gong in the kitchen, you know, just in the way, not really knowing what I was doing, just get on with it, you know. And that's exactly the point that's being made here. That is exactly the point. That if we do all this stuff, we might look the part, sound the part, act the part. But without love, it's totally nothing. It's pointless. That's what it says, you know. It's worth nothing. We can stand here with our arms up in worship and we can look like we're super spiritual. But without love, it's nothing. It's nothing. In business, we often talk, people will talk, you'll have heard of KPIs, key performance indicators, where you look and you set a standard and you say, well, this is the measure, these are our key performance indicators, this is where we want to be on a particular thing, this is where other people are on a particular thing, this is what we're going to do, and we measure, you can measure against them. But I was reading this passage this morning and I thought, you know, the verses at 1 to 3, if we're not careful, They can become our sort of Christian KPIs. They can become our Christian key performance indicators because they're so obviously there. So when we read, you know, if I speak in human or angelic tongues but do not have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move the mountains but do not have love, I'm nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast but do not have love, I gain nothing. And if we're not careful, we can allow the obvious things that are described in those opening verses to become the benchmarks by which we sort of set our standard of Christian living. We can so readily they can become the thing against which we measure ourselves. But so-and-so, they look so into the worship, or so-and-so prays so loud in the prayer meetings, or so-and-so, they always seem so on it. God looks at the heart, doesn't he? His word's so clear on that. God looks at the heart. And what's in the heart is what counts. What's in the heart is what matters. The verses at 4 to 10, I won't go through these, we'll pick out a few. They pick out real love. Pick out the love with which God pours out so freely for every single one of us. Every single one of us without measure. Without measure. You know, it was funny this, because I was thinking this morning, I got this jumper out, right? It's not a particularly great jumper. It's not a particularly nice jumper. It's just a jumper that I happened to find in the cupboard. And then a thought went through my mind. I thought, I only just got that jumper. Like, maybe if I could overwear it. Could you overwear a jumper? Maybe I should wear another jumper. Then I thought, you know what? Like, that's so the opposite of what God's love is like. You can't wear out God's love. There isn't a point at which you think, I can't rely on God's love today because there might not be some for me tomorrow or the next day or the next time. It doesn't work like that. God's love is freely given and always there. Justin Welby, who's the Archbishop of Canterbury, I think this guy is amazing. I think he is not just a leader of the Church of England. I think he's one of the people God has raised up to lead the church in this nation. He's absolutely incredible. And I would encourage you not to listen to some of the things he's said and read some of the things he's written. I listened to Desert Island Discs he did, and this a few years ago. And you may know that his daughter, when she was two, she was killed in a road traffic accident. And he described at that time how she was ill, very ill in hospital, and he and his wife went for a cup of coffee, and he sensed during this time away from the hospital that God was just saying to him, you know, it's time to pass her over to me. And he said that in that moment, they just were so seized supernaturally of the tangible love of God that he said it was unbelievable. You just see so supernaturally of the type of love that's described here. And then he went on to compare that to another time when they had difficulties in their family, and he was expecting that same, to be seized of the same tangible love of God again. He said it didn't come. It didn't come. But upon reflection, what he said when he looked back on this time was that it did come. It just came through the people of his church, who were the hands and feet of Jesus to the family in that moment. That's amazing, isn't it? You can't put the love of God in a box. You can't say it's always going to be like this. That's why God puts us in a church. That's why he puts us in a family. Not so that we can come and look down the aisle and think, oh gosh, they're really super, super spiritual. Look at them. But so that we can receive what he has for us through the love one for another. And just whilst we're on that I was really encouraged by something he said. And I don't know whether you remember this, but about 4 or 5 years ago, he gave a speech and he said he wanted to compete Wonga out of business. You know Wonga, these payday lenders? And now what he could have done as the Archbishop of Canterbury is he could have stood in his pulpit and said, well, this is ridiculous, this is terrible, this is awful. How dare you do this and not do anything else? We're going to pray about this, but we're not going to do anything else. And what he actually said was, he said, we're going to, as a church, we're going to get into action. We're going to compete you out of business. We're going to set up lenders that are moral. We're going to set up debt counselling that's good. We're going to help people so that they don't need to go to you. They come to us. That's love in action. And earlier this year, they went out of business. Because as a church, we are called not just to sit here and talk about love or experience it, but then to go into the world and spread it. And that means we've got to engage with difficult issues. We've got to engage and be prepared to get our hands mucky and grapple with things of the world, because we know that we are called to be light in the darkness. Let me read this to you. This encouragement. When we talk, well, what is love? What's this real love? What does it look like? Let me describe this. In World War II, prisoners of war were building a railroad. After their day's work, the shovels were counted. The guards became enraged. One was missing. The prisoners were lined up and ordered to stand there until someone admitted they'd stolen the shovel. No one said it was them. The guard shouted. Still no one budged. The guard threatened to kill all of them unless someone owned up. At last, one man stepped forward and said that he had done it. The guard killed him. Later, at the guardhouse, the tools were recounted. No shovel was missing. The innocent man had sacrificed his life to save the others. 2,000 years ago, an innocent man stepped forward for us and sacrificed his life to save us. That's the type of love that the Lord has for us. That's the type of love that the Lord has for everybody. That's the type of love that we, as believers in him, are called to share. It's some of the characteristics of it in here. Love is kind. You know this reference to kindness. It's not some kind of wet, sort of, just a bit flimsy. It's actually what it means here. It's to have the strength of a war horse. Strength and courage of being able to control that emotion in the most difficult testing of times. That's what that means, that kindness. It's not wet and flimsy. It's real and it's solid, but it's controlled strength. Not self-seeking. You know, Jesus, God doesn't love us because he's seeking something for himself. He's God. He is love. If we don't respond to him, it's us that misses out. Not him. Not self-seeking. It's not like my love can be, or your love can be, where I think, oh, well, if I do this, I'll get something in return, or, you know, it doesn't work like that. That's not the love of God here that's being described. If we don't respond to God, his love is great enough that he respects that decision. It's us that miss out. It's us that miss out on the abundant life he's promised for us now. And it's us that miss out on an eternity with him. Love never fails. As I said from the jumper in the cupboard, God's love will never run out. There is never too much of it. You can never exhaust it. It can never be spent. I asked at the start, I wonder what I want my life to be marked by. I want my life to be marked by the fruit of the Spirit that is described in the Bible. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. Now, those aren't the fruits of James Johnston. I can't work harder to be more patient. I can't work harder to have more self-control. It's the fruit of the Holy Spirit. It's the fruit of the Spirit of God working in our hearts. And that ultimately is the call on the life of every single believer. To let Jesus make you more like he is this side of heaven. So that the world around us is changed for him. That's the call on the life of every single believer. To allow the Spirit of God to change our hearts to become more like him. So that we are his hands, his feet, salt and light. And so to finish, I wonder, where are you? Where am I? Are you focused on those Christian KPIs where you think, if only I could be a little bit more like that person? Or maybe you're trapped in those KPIs and you think that somehow you need to behave like that because that's what people expect. Maybe you don't know the love that God has for you. Maybe you once did, but you've forgotten it. Can I just encourage you this morning to respond now to the love that God has for you? Not out of duty, not out of any sense of anything other than because he loves you. Because he longs to have relationship with you. Because he longs to work in every single area of your life and your family and your job and your finances and everything. It's because he loves you. And it's love that's everlasting. It's love that never changes. It's love that goes beyond death and through into eternity. It's love that can change a nation. It's love that can get a hold of the things that we read about and see on the television and bring peace and bring hope and bring joy. Not bring disagreement and strife and worry and anxiety. It can deal with everything despite all the worry and tension and uncertainty and anxiety. Because it's solid and it's eternal and it's bigger than any of those things. And that, I believe, is going to be the biggest challenge for the church in the coming years. Is to be seen as people of love, of hope, of joy. Not of anxiety and worry and concern and anger and bitterness and division. None of those things do we read about or see from on the television. The church needs to be bigger than that because God's bigger than that. And that's the call. The next couple of years going forward, can the church rise to be seen again as a people of love, unconditional love, as a people of hope, as a people of joy? You know, I was looking at this last night, there were Christians who changed the course of this nation when they had a full realization of how much God loved them. Changed how we educate children, changed how people's working lives were, changed how their housing conditions were. Because when they realized how much God loved them and loved everybody they saw around them, there was no, they couldn't contain it. It's the call on the church. Not to be silent, not to be pessimistic, not to sit inside our holy huddles despairing of what we read in the paper. But to say, no, we can rise above this. We can be a people of love, a people of joy, a people of hope. That will be a light in the darkness. Amen. Should we play that? So we've got a song. Maybe you want to reflect on those couple of things. And can I encourage you, if you just to come before the Lord in the stillness and the quietness of your heart. He knows where you're at. He knows if you're stuck in this performance mode of judging yourself against those other key performance indicators. He knows if you're hungry for him. If your heart is stirring this morning, Can I encourage you to respond to the love that God has for you? Amen. Is that working?
Enemies attempts to muck up our technology, don't they? God's love this morning.